Welcome into the second hour of the programme. A caller says, yesterday I went shopping in Strabane for Christmas, four Christmas cards with the nativity theme. I tried several card shops and couldn't find one that sold nativity cards. I could get cards with robins, dogs and snow scenes, but none that represented the true meaning of Christmas. Is our religious beliefs being stolen by stealth by card manufacturers? According to the last census, Ireland is still a Christian country. I don't know. Maybe it's a commercial thing. I mean, you don't want to be holding Christmas cards for 52 weeks, right? Maybe the ones that show a traditional nativity scene aren't as popular. I mean, cards, generally speaking, aren't as popular as they used to be. I don't think this was an ideological situation. I would imagine, this is just me thinking, and I'm not contradicting you, I would imagine it's probably more to do with the fact that which cards sell best. Maybe that's it. On the fox hunting ban vote last night, it shows how the loony left actually is. The voting for a ban on fox hunting, on the other hand, putting forward put-to-birth abortions. Is a fox more important than a baby? I mean, talking about babies, what about women and women's rights and women's choices as well? You know, you can cherry-pick all the arguments to suit how you might go. But how did Donegal deputies vote? Deputy Charles Ward of the 100% Redress Party. He's the only one who voted in favour of a ban on fox hunting. Piers Doherty opposed the motion. The party stated, although it's not a uniform opinion within the party, but he stated that parts of the motion would leave farmers defenceless. Deputy Padraig McLaughlin opposed the motion along the same lines. I wonder, is there a little bit of an irony there? Because fox hunting, whilst it's been around for a long time, we didn't invent it. The British brought it into Ireland during the colonial era. So this is effectively a hangover from British rule. To be honest with you, for some that might be enough to get shot of it in the first place, if not for the welfare of the foxes. Deputy Pat the Cope Gallagher opposed the motion. Minister Charlie McConnell-Logue also opposed the motion. So Deputy Charles Ward, the only one who voted in this county in favour of a ban on fox hunting. As I say, it's really just a... Maybe it has become tradition now, but it was the Brits that introduced it during colonial times. A caller says, I'm a pensioner. I was travelling home on Sunday night in the Gortlea area and my car died out and I panicked a bit. The car coming down stopped to help. A young, tall lad called Oisin got out and helped me. I want to say a huge thank you to him for his help. He got me home safely. Well done, Oisin. Maybe you don't realise the significance you had in getting that person out of that tricky situation. Fair play. And we love to hear, by the way, those acts of kindness and positive news as well here on the programme. Staying on the roads. Hi, Greg. I saw a very dangerous thing this morning on the Galdana Road where an older man and an older lady were walking in the middle of the road because the road was flooded. They were going to get the local link bus at the crossroads. Thanks to all the bus, lorry, van and cars that showed respect to let them safely get there by stopping. On to the defective concrete block scheme. We had this conversation yesterday with Deputy Charles Ward and Senator Niall Blaney. If you have an interest in it and you missed yesterday's show, you should go and listen back to the podcast. It's in the first hour, or watch it back on our live stream. This caller says, yes, we're on the 90-10 DBC scheme. Paid for testing, €5,580, and got 90% back. Paid the engineer's fee, €3,939, to go for tender. Because we were out of leaf, we decided to hold off, as 15 out of 16 builders said they would not do out of leaf. They would only do full demolition. Have asked for technical review. It won't happen until 465 is published. That's the review of it. And the housing agency then reviewed the scheme. DCC told me on Monday there's a cap now of €7,000 on testing and engineers' fees. So we will only get the balance of the 10% of the testing fee and part of the 3939, that's in thousands, of course, the engineer's fees, as will be over the 7,000 when you add the two together. If we only went testing now, we would not have to pay the full testing, as the housing agency council pay that. So we're being penalised because they were early adopters, effectively. Greg, the problem at the heart of this scheme is the remediation options. They do not restore mortgageable conditions. Banks have stated they need independent engineers to certify remediated homes, whilst Engineers Ireland state IS 465 is not fit for purpose. What is the situation now in relation to that, I wonder? Hi, back a few months ago on the 9 till noon show, Greg mentioned a website where a person could go onto to report a streetlight that wasn't working. Is there any chance you could find out the name of that website for me? Thanks. Indeed, of course I can. I will do that while we're playing the bingo numbers and come back to it. In fact, you know what? Someone else has done it for me. Electric Skyline are responsible for the maintenance of street lighting in the Republic of Ireland. So if you want to report a faulty street light, you can go to you can call Street Lighting Fault Line 1800 150 150. You can email Donegal at electricskyline.ie. But you can also go onto the website electricskyline.ie and you can actually zoom in and tag the light that's off. Maybe that might see suit you better. But if you are reporting it on the phone or via email, get the poll number and its location. Or, as I say, you can go onto that website, or at least you could when it was launched, and you can go in and quite literally tag the light that's off. Another scam going around, you get a message from someone in your contacts. I did yesterday morning, and you're sent a code, and they say, I sent you a code there by mistake. Can you return it, please? When you do, they can have access to your phone. Please do not return any codes, even if it's from a number you think you know. It's a cloned number, and you are being scammed. A caller says, the amount of people caught driving while under a ban is increasing. That's quite true. It's time we made an example of one of those boys. In my opinion, anyone caught driving while under a ban should be given a lifetime ban. I don't know what the actual sentencing is in relation to that, what the guidelines are. I'm not really quite sure. Obviously, there is further sanction, but it doesn't go as far as you're saying. But even if you seemingly are involved in an awful situation, a fatal collision or what have you, do people get lifetime bans even in those situations? I'm not quite sure they do. Right, we're giving away a car. Highland Radio is giving away a car on this show next Tuesday. It's a beautiful 261 Renault. Let me just double check the name. I've had a bit of a mental symbosa, I was going to say, but it's not that. It is. It's a Renault Symbios. It's worth over 35,000K. That's our main Christmas draw prize. We still have €2,000 to give away. One tonight, or this evening, on the Power Hour with Ivan Borland. And then we've got another one tomorrow morning with Lee Gooch. I'm going to join Lee to give that €1,000 away. So three draws to go. If you've got your tickets, you know you're in them already. Good luck to you if you are taking part. But maybe you think now is the time. Maybe it's going to be a late number or a late entry, should I say, that comes out today or tomorrow, or indeed for the car. Maybe that ticket has yet to be sold. We just simply don't know. That's the luck of the draw, quite simply. So you can still get in if you want to. And why not for today's draw, tomorrow's draw, 1,000 each day, and then for the car on Tuesday. Go onto our website if you want to, highlandradio.com, or you can text or, you can't text or WhatsApp. You can call us on 074-91-25,000 and we'll make sure you're in the draw tonight for Ivan's show and tomorrow for Lee's show. Now, people were buying tickets when we just had the car up for grabs and then we added this 10 grand, five draws 1 week, five draws the next. So the big prize is still there for you to win. It is the car. It's a beauty. If you want to buy a ticket and if you can afford to and have a bit of fun with your hard-earned cash, then give us a call on 074-91-25,000. A ticket's 15. You can get five for a tenner. You can get five for 50, which is a tenner a ticket. 074-91-25,000. We'll make sure you're in that draw. Just to remind you, you don't have to answer your phone. Your name's associated with the number. If your ticket comes out, you've won the car. You've won the 1,000. You've won the 1,000. That's just the way it works. You don't have to answer your phone. You've won if your number comes out. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. I can say good morning now to Adam O'Toole, journalist with the Irish Farmers Journal. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
Visual, actually. We're seeing what's going on there. I suppose give us the background to this demonstration, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I guess it's one of the biggest farmer demonstrations ever to take place in the last 20 years in Brussels. Over 10,000 farmers here behind me have descended on the centre of Brussels this morning. We're here beside Garda Nord. The speeches are just starting on a large stage. Francie Gorman has just arrived here. He left on Monday back home with his son Tom on a John Deere tractor and made the journey here. And there's another 60 or 70 farmers, IFA delegation here. There's an ICSA delegation here as well. So huge numbers here. And speaking to farmers from France, Sweden, Italy this morning, they're very frustrated around Mercosur. I guess that's one of the biggest talking points here this morning. And the cap budget, there's a 22% proposal to cut the cap budget going forward from 2027 onwards, and that has left farmers very frustrated as to what their future is.
How significant is it, do you think, that there's no lone voices here, that farmers from all over Europe have come together?
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. There's an umbrella body called Copa Cadiga. That's the umbrella body for all the farm organisations across Europe. But look, it's a real demonstration of power here. As much of the city has been closed off this morning, there's hundreds of tractors surrounded around the city here. There's areas of the city closed off. And I guess the Council of Ministers meeting today and tomorrow, they will see, I guess, how strong that farmer lobby is and that farmer organisation is across Europe. And it sends a real message. They're not happy. They want change. I guess a big one about that. Whether it's go ahead or not, France and Italy have indicated that they have grave reservations about it. They've looked for a delay. But all time will tell, I guess, tomorrow as to what will happen there.
Joe, what is the message? Adam, what is the message coming out of Ireland, though? You know, because it's very hard to sort of pin down what national politicians are thinking. But we are hearing, you know, MEPs being more vocal, even though they're members of government parties.
Yeah, the response from the government would be disappointing, I guess. We've seen France very vocal against Mercosur and calling for that delay. Giorgia Meloni in the last 2 days also called for delay and said a signing of the deal on Friday will be premature. But our own politicians have been sitting on the fence over the last number of days. They haven't given straight answers around what their decision will be. They talked about speaking to other countries, about assembling that bloc and minority, but they haven't been, it would say, steadfast and sure about their rejection of it. And that would concern me in terms of what their view on it is and what line they will take at that vote tomorrow. I guess we need that 35% block of minority with France and Italy rolling together for that. Then we have a chance of hitting that 35%. But if they don't, the deal will be signed. And I guess it will go through further ratification in spring 2026.
All right, listen, thank you very much for that, Adam O'Toole of the Irish Farmers Journal.
Adam Woods.
Sorry, Adam, my apologies. That's my fault. Adam Woods, journalist with the Irish Farmers Journal. Okay, thank you very much indeed for that. And of course, you can continue to track the coverage of that here on Highland Radio, but also in the Farmers Journal. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000, and you can give us a call to 07491 25,000. We're hoping to cross to Joe Sweeney, who's president of the IFA in Donegal as well. He is part of the cohort out there. We'll see if we can get through to him. Joe, are you there? Hello, Joe? Yeah, Joe's in the same space. Unfortunately, his connection just isn't quite as good. So what we might do is return to that in a moment, because there is a strong Donegal representation over there as well. A caller says there's plenty of nativity cards in St. Paul's shop in Letterkenny. Okay, there you go. There is a caller that went into Strabane looking for them. They might well be stocked elsewhere in Strabane, I don't know, but they were disappointed that they didn't see a range of nativity cards. But St. Paul's shop in Letterkenny. A caller says, normally at this time of year, I'd have a load of Christmas cards, but sending them is definitely a dying tradition. It's the cost. Like, if you send 10 of them, you're heading towards, what, 20 quid or not far off it. A lot of people now say that I'll not be sending cards this year. I'll be donating instead. I'm like, all right, show me the receipt. I'm only joking. Greg, I really hope sending a card stays because it requires the effort of buying stamps, updating addresses and a handwriting. A note, it carries significantly more emotional weight than a text or social media post. Of course it does, but it is a cost, you know. But it's nice to receive them. It's nice to send them too. Another caller says, I was looking for the Francis Brennan Nativity set in Dunn Stores. I went to multiple branches and it was sold out everywhere. The staff said the Nativity merchandise is the first to go every year, so the commercial demand is there. You just have to be early. Listen, brilliant. Thank you for that. So maybe there is more demand on them than I sort of suggested earlier in the show, and that's why they're not there, because they are sold out. Interesting. Greg, there's plenty of nativity Christmas cards in my local towns of Ballybuffet and Letterkenny. Some folk will always find something to moan about. Happy Christmas to all the retail staff who are so helpful and friendly while listening to Jingle Bells on a loop. Yes, it's like torture, I suppose, after a while. Although I think it's like when you have children, you get used to certain noises, right? And they drone out. I mean, I could do this show with two toddlers running backwards and forwards. It would annoy you probably listening far more than I. You just get used to things. On the fox hunting ban, a caller says the bill did not stop farmers shooting foxes that are a problem. It was about hunting foxes with dogs and traps that also trap other wildlife. Re-fox hunting, says another. As the late, great Oscar Wilde said, the unspeakable in pursuit of the unbeatable. On drink driving, a lifetime ban on a person caught driving while disqualified is not a viable punishment. The ban will just be ignored. What normally happens to a person caught driving while disqualified is that the ban is extended. The only workable solution for such offence is a term of imprisonment, but with our overcrowded prisons, the status quo will remain. Yet we're not going to be locked up for that unless it's very, very serious. And I suppose, too, is the whole idea of law and order. The whole idea of law or order, is it not, is that you, there is a chance to rehabilitate, to learn from your lessons, that your punishment of a 10-year ban, for an example, changes your behaviour, etc. We don't want to give up on that completely, or do we? Read the Bondi terror attack at the weekend on the Jewish community, where all the virtue signalers queuing up to get on your show condemning this atrocity. You know, the ones who march for Malin, also swim for Gaza, who launch paper boat flotillas in the Swilly, and who love to be seen publicly protesting crimes against humanity. But only those who in their selective minds deserve attention. You're all very quiet. I wonder why. Geez, we were inundated with people critical of the attacks in Bondi. We were speaking to many people from there with Donegal connections that are really worried with the way things are going. Sometimes maybe the default position is that those voices won't be heard, and maybe you just text having not heard them, but they were on. I've seen nothing but criticism of it. And also, too, the way you're framing it, it's as if it was some sort of a response to something else that happens rather than a couple of radicalised madmen doing madmen stuff. I understand the point you're making there, but no, there was a lot of outrage on this programme in relation to that, I must say. From a Highland Radio listener now via email, I contacted your show recently due to my elderly parents' lack of phone service with Air. We were contacting Air daily and explaining that my parents had a panic button and due to my dad's health problems, they relied on their phone service. We were told something different every day, and after hearing how Highland Radio recently helped a woman having issues with Air, I decided to contact the station. And on Thursday last week. Now, thankfully, my parents' phone service has been fixed this morning after 3 weeks with no service. Just a quick email to thank the show for all their help. That comes from a Highland listener. Now, we do a lot of stuff off air, and that was one I believe Caroline worked off air on and resolved. It didn't make it to air, and that's a lot of what happens on behind the scenes. So there you go. Good to hear. Now, that doesn't mean we can fix every problem, right? Because there's millions and millions of problems, but and we have limited resources. You know, if you go to a morning show on RTE or News Talk, you've got like six or seven producers and junior and senior producers. It's just us, me and Caroline and Shannon and today Donna Marie. We don't have massive resources, so we can't fix every problem, but we work really hard to do as much as we can in extreme cases.
You'll never need us.
Okay, let's go back to Brussels, and we hope to connect now with Joe Sweeney, president of the IFA. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, okay.
How are you doing?
Not too bad at all. We were speaking to another guest a little earlier on. Very noisy, very visual. Lots of people across Europe very upset with the potential impacts of the Mercosur deal.
Yes. It's probably one of the biggest days in Europe for a long, long time. Ursula von der Leyen is under pressure to take this deal across the line today. But sort of yesterday, Italy has come on board with France, and now you can't depend on Italy, but they've come up on board sort of saying that they want to delay it. the president in Brazil said that if it's delayed and not signed this week, that he will not sign the Mercosur deal in his term as president. So she's looking to get it signed, and she's even trying to try to get it through without actually going through the EU Parliament for a vote. She's trying every way she can to actually get this across the line and go on Friday to Brazil with some sort of an offering. So that's where we're at. It's definitely not a good deal. It's not a level playing field. That's what it is.
And of course, farmers today. It's not just about the Mercosur deal either, is it? It's a multi-pronged attack on farming. Some feel cap cuts, overregulation, etc.
That's exactly it. It's the cap cuts for the next program. They're chatting 20% cut, and the regulations were overregulated. Everything that's been done is regulation after regulation, and farmers seem to have enough of it. So there's 10,000 of them gathered here at the moment, and there's just still buses coming in from different places. I don't know how many tractors are here, but it's frightening to look at the amount of people and the amount of gathering and flags that are here today. It's so busy, and the authorities actually are on high alert because they don't know how it's going to go, because we're not so bad, but the French farmers are just very, very tough cookies.
Yeah.
The last time 10 years ago there was a protest here, they dug up roundabouts and everything, so they would cause mayhem.
Yeah. What do you know what the Irish government position is on this deal? What does Micheál Martin think? What does the Tánaiste think? What does the farming agriculture minister think?
Well, if that's like looking into a glass bowl, before the election they said they were with us, no Mercosur, and they were against it. Micheál Martin's in Brussels since yesterday, and not a peep. No one knows he's here. There's no correspondence of nothing of what he's thinking or how he's going to vote. He's been asked, as a lot of the MEPs, and it's frightening, the silence. So there's nothing.
Like, it really is quite bizarre. It really is quite bizarre that we don't actually have a formal government position on one of the biggest deals, if not the biggest deals, affecting farming. We actually don't know what the government's position is. What does Taoiseach Micheál Martin think? What does Simon Harris think? And even those within the Fine Gael party are saying, look, what you're on the fence here. Are you for it or against it? If you're against it, speak up now.
Well, it was the work of the IFA that sent the lads to Brazil, and the results that came out of Brazil was frightening. Brazil recalled their products out of Europe, and that's what sort of has stemmed from this today, that no one actually went to look to see what was being produced in Brazil, what the standards were. And then you have Donald Trump said Europe is very weak. If you come to America, you can get a deal signed in an office. They've been in the European Commission for 25 years and they haven't got this deal over the line. And so it's putting pressure now on Europe that if it doesn't go through this week, it's going to look like Europe is weak. So that's what Micheál Martin and our own government is, you know, very, very Fine Gael. Like, there's nothing from any of them. I don't know how they're going to vote, to be honest with you.
Is the best outcome that Europe wobbles on this and it is delayed, you know, and allows for maybe more focused discussion at national and European level?
I think so, Greg. I think so. Because in part of their thing last night, they said that they were looking for a clause in the deal that if the standards weren't met, they couldn't take the products in. But they didn't. That was defeated. They didn't want that clause in the deal. So, you know, it's frightening the way they're putting it together. It's just they're trying to railroad it through, but it'll be just very interesting to see how it's going to go.
Mm. It's just a peculiar situation because you know there is some text out there where the Irish government does take a position, but we're not hearing any public conversation about it from the government leadership, if that makes sense. So there is some text out there saying they're opposing the current Mercosur deal, but where is the voice to back that up? Are they waiting to see if this can be blocked? It's very peculiar.
It's just silence. That's what it is, and that's the frightening part. Like, this doesn't seem to be anything. Like, they should be on board with us, all the one ham sheets pushing that back, because they know the effects it's going to have on agriculture in this country.
Mm. Okay.
So, no, I don't know.
Right, Joe, listen, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. Look after yourself, and hopefully things don't escalate over there, but there are some really quite... the French farmers don't take things lying down. That's Joe Sweeney, the president of the IFA in Donegal. A listener says, just like to point out, Greg, that fox hunting has been introduced in Ireland, or had been in Ireland, long before colonial times, and that hunting by lurchers to control foxes and rabbits and all kinds of vermin and for food, even though not documented, has been around long before the English ever introduced fox hunting by hound packs in the 1700s. Well, yes, but one's a sport, and as you say yourself, one was about hunting and the control of foxes and rabbits and hares, etc. But I mean, you know, Ireland didn't have the Galway Blazers or the Donhallow Hunt before the Brits introduced it in 1745. And turned it into a sport of the aloof of the rich. I'm not saying that's what it is now, right? But yes, of course, hare hunting was common practice around our parts when I was younger. There's no doubt about that. But that's a different thing. This is about sport and people in red jackets with black hats and their hounds and their whistles and the trumpets. The British brought all of that side of it in, didn't they? Dr. Anthony Breslin is a consultant in public health with the HSE, and he joins me on the show now. Doctor, thank you very much for your time.
Not at all, Greg. Good morning to you.
We've been speaking about this in the media for a while, with the sort of urgency in the language increasing. I think the message from the HSE has been strong all the while, don't get me wrong, but we are seeing, are we, a stronger... earlier flu, is that how you would categorise it?
Yes, we're about 3 to 4 weeks earlier than we have been in previous years. In previous years, we've got it just after the new year. This year, we've got it before Christmas. And we have got a virus strain that is causing more severe illness, particularly among those who haven't been vaccinated. And that's the position we're in terms of more people ill, more people seeing their GP, more people in emergency departments, and more people being admitted. And some end up in ICU, unfortunately.
Yeah, indeed. And the pressure we're seeing on the hospitals, it's not necessarily people just trying to circumnavigate the health system and straight in there. People are being admitted in big numbers. The people that are attending need to be there for the most part, don't they?
There are people who are genuinely ill, and that's it. But yeah, obviously... you will have one or two people who it's easier for them to go to ED than go to the GP, or they can't get a GP at the time. I mean, that's life. But as you said, the vast majority of people are people who are too sick and know they need to go straight to hospital, or being sent in by their GP after a phone call, or else after being seen in the surgery. So yes, sick people are showing up, and the vast majority of them, over 75% of the people being admitted, have not had the flu vaccine. So the basic message is, look after yourself. If you have the flu, you know, take your Lemsip and Calpol, etc., paracetamol. If you get more ill, go and talk to your GP. If you have the flu, try not to spread it. So sort of don't be going to parties. If you have to go out and get your pint of milk and your loaf of bread or whatever, do that, but keep your contact to a minimum. If you haven't been vaccinated, go and get the vaccine, because we have in the elderly, the over 65s, particularly the older you get, we have a very good uptake rate, over 80%. Children 2 to 17, the national average for the uptake is 20%. In Donegal, it's just over 10%. So we're very, very low on that.
Say that one more time, those figures, Anthony, sorry. In terms of uptake
for the elderly, people over 65 and etc., and people in residential facilities, the uptake there is near over 80%. In children 2 to 7 with the nasal vaccine, which is very effective nationally, the uptake is 20%. In Donegal, it's only 10%. And then our uptake in healthcare staff is on average 20%. It's higher among doctors and paramedical staff, but lower among other staff. So we want people to get it, to make sure they don't get the flu. If they get the flu, it's not as bad. And then they don't spread it to other people. And being very selfish about it, if you're not sick, you can work and look after people who are sick.
How long does it take? There is a bit of a lead-in time before the flu vaccine reaches its maximum efficiency. Is that
full
right?
Protection, yes. Full protection after 2 weeks, but it starts to kick in after about a week. So you will get some response after about a week.
If the powers that be had opted to make the enhanced influenza vaccine available for people over 65, one of the more vulnerable cohorts, do you think that would have reduced the pressure that we're seeing on hospitals?
No. It wouldn't really, because it is a bit better. But in that age group, we've got a good uptake. Should have sort of fairly decent herd immunity. It would have made a minor difference. The main thing is for people to get vaccinated in the first place, because the vaccine that we are using is not a bad vaccine. It's a pretty good vaccine.
If you had the flu already this season, does that afford you some protection, or would you still recommend those who would best benefit?
If you had the flu last February, no protection, because the virus has changed. If you had it a week ago, it might provide you some protection, but still, if you're there is a theoretical possibility you could get the flu again the next February, next March. So even if you've got the flu, you haven't had the vaccine, get the vaccine when you're fit for it.
Does it give you the flu, the vaccine?
No. It can give you a small sort of, a flu-like illness. You can feel a bit off. Some people can feel a bit off the day after. But that's actually a good thing. It shows your body's reacting to the vaccine. But it does not give you the flu.
Okay. If people want to get it, where is it available?
You can get it from your GP, your pharmacy. And if you go on to the HSC website or HSC Live, you can see the clinics that are still being offered up to Christmas.
Okay. And is it free for all, doctor? Sorry.
It's free for anybody who is in the recommended list. If you're a healthy 35-year-old, unfortunately, you might have to pay maybe €35 sort of dispensing fee.
Understood.
To get the vaccine.
Okay. Listen, Dr. Anthony Bresson, thank you very much. Is there anything else that's important to add from your perspective, or have we covered it all?
No, just be safe in general. Watch yourself travelling. Be careful putting up the Christmas lights, all those sort of safety messages, drive safe, etc. And to wish you and the staff there and all your listeners a happy Christmas and a good new year.
Happy Christmas to you and all. Thank you very much indeed, Dr. Anthony Breslin there. Let me see. In relation to Christmas, do you know what's beautiful? Is it Remelton? Drove through Remelton there the other evening, and it looks absolutely stunning, I must say, in terms of whoever's responsible for the Christmas decorations. Absolutely gorgeous. They've got the arches of the bridges lit up. You've got the lights running down along the river. But obviously, because the water's there, you've got this sort of reflection. Absolutely stunning, I must say. And, you know, you can tell then, too, sort of on the outskirts of the town, residents obviously caught up in it. They've amplified their contribution as well, and some of the houses have done up spectacular. But I thought I'd mention that. It is absolutely gorgeous. And what put me in mind of that? Hi, Greg. I was in Dunloe Shopping Centre yesterday, which is done up lovely for Christmas, but I never saw a crib anywhere. Is this the normal now, as I thought Christmas was about the nativity season for a reason? I don't know what the story is. There was a nativity display in our house when we were growing up. You know, it was put up as part of Christmas. Is it there now? No. Is it not there now because we feel less about sort of religion? No. I don't know. I don't understand. I certainly don't think any shopping centre is going, right, we're not doing that because, you know, blooming hell, this country's changing. Maybe it's, maybe there is one and you didn't see it. I just think that people go, right, well, we'll do this and we'll do that and that suits there. And it's just not a conscious decision not to put one up, so to speak. But what the feeling I'm getting from lots of people texting in, that they do like that tradition. So if someone hasn't done it, maybe it's something that could be included and it would work well for your area. On the issue of kindness, the other week when Christmas lights were being switched on and the local class were asked to come along and sing Christmas carols, a small number of kids couldn't attend. The following day, a pizza was delivered to the school, but those kids who didn't attend were not given any pizza. How in today's world could any school make this decision? Well, how could this text be listed as kindness? It seems to be quite the opposite of it. Whatever happened to the season of goodwill? Did this happen? Could someone... I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just wondering, did the texter hear this from someone else? I would be flabbergasted if some children who couldn't attend a Christmas carol for a light switch on were then excluded from a pizza the next day. Did that happen? Surely it couldn't have. New regulations are coming in, which means that you will have to register your short-term lets if you advertise them out on Airbnb or any of those other websites for that matter. If you rent them out for more than 21 days a year, I believe it is. Brian joins me on the programme now. Brian, you've been putting some info out in relation to this. Is it because you think there's not a lot of knowledge out there about this, or is there something else to what you're talking about, Brian?
Oh, hello, Greg, and happy Christmas to you. Thanks for taking time to speak to me. So I just wanted to maybe put out there the potential impact on tourism for Donegal with some changes that are coming along. I have a holiday home. My family first came to Donegal in 1966 when I was nearly a child and rented a holiday home. So this is something, obviously, that's been going on for forever. There are a lot of holiday homes out there. I have one, and when I'm not using it, I rent it out to help try and pay bills, and I've meant my pension. And a lot of the people who do that in Donegal are, in fact, pensioners and predominantly women. And we actually welcome the idea that there would be a Bord Fáilte register of bona fide renters so that standards are kept good. We're part of the Cead Mille Fáilte, and we're the living of Cead Mille Fáilte, so great. Some of the legislation will then ask for that there's planning permission be changed to allow these holiday homes to become commercial premises. And while I understand the requirement for that, there's a consultation out with Donegal County Council at the minute. When I look at the County Council consultation, proposing that changing planning permission will attract a fee of €20,000 as a one-off payment. Now, thankfully, I don't rely on my income from my holiday home, although I pay tax on it. I don't rely on it as a number one. But for a lot of people, it is a part of their income. I don't think they can really afford €20,000 upfront, to be compliant with that planning. And my concern is that what I would do is probably what most people who own a holiday would do is, yes, for that bill, we'll just not rent our houses out. It's not going to make us sell them. We're still not coming to Donegal. But if you multiply that out, I would be concerned about the fragile economy in places, you know, like Falkara and Dunfanaghy, close to where my house is, and other small rural towns, which, you know, heavily rely on people coming from Dublin, from America, from Belfast, Cork, and wherever to spend their hard-earned cash in the pubs and clubs. So I'm a little bit worried that, on one hand, what seems like a good idea, I know there's a housing crisis. My kids are struggling to get a house. There's a housing crisis, and I totally understand that. We are talking about just holiday homes that are rented for 40 or 50 days of the year when the owners aren't used.
Yeah, and what happens if also to if you rent them out for less than 15, 21 days, I've seen two different time frames. It's complicated, isn't it? I wonder what will happen, because will that mean a lot of people will just sort of try and rent them out on the QT? Because it'll get to the point for many that it's simply not worth it. The planning permission, the registration, the fees, you know, for what they're taking in. You know, a lot of people make good money off Airbnb, but others say to me it's barely worth the hassle. So this, but as you say, this does not necessarily mean we're going to see a flood of rental property available.
Well, I think my concern is for tourism, not for me individually. If I decide not to rent the house, it won't have a massive impact on me. But it will definitely have impacts on people who rely on that 3,000 or 4,000 euro that they might make in a season. Remembering there's 52 weeks of the year and probably 12 weeks where you rent it out if you're not using it. So I don't think, I'm certainly not pleading my case.
I understand.
You know, I have a TikTok channel where I advocate, have been advocating for tourism in Donegal for years. I'm concerned about Sydney will just simply go, £3,000 isn't worth paying.
Okay, listen, Brian, the phone line has gone on me there. But listen, your point is well made and understood. And I would say, even though there's been some PR out there, some people are learning about this for the first time.